Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming, or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. Visit speakuptalkradio.com. And my guest today is someone with a topic close to my heart, and that is caregiving. She is Harriet Hodgson. Harriet has been a freelancer for 37 years and is the author of thousands of articles, 35 books, and writes for 3 websites. She has cared for 3 generations of family members, her mother, who developed dementia in her 80s, and her twin grandchildren, who were teenagers when they lost both of their parents in accidents in 2007. Then, in 2013, Harriet's husband's aorta dissected and he had 3 emergency operations. Surgeons managed to save his life, but he suffered a spinal stroke during the last operation and his legs are paralyzed. Harriet became his primary caregiver, a role she has had for more than 2 years. With 19 years of caregiving experience, Harriet decided to write a series of 4 books for family caregivers. Writing helps me to cope, she explains, and I'm helping others at the same time. And this is one of my favorite of all messages in the world, when people take horrible, exhausting, and traumatic experiences and turn them around to help others while helping themselves at the same time. And I've been waiting to talk to this powerful woman, so welcome to the show, Harriet.
Thanks, Pat.
And I say that you are powerful, Harriet, because prior to right now, you told me that while your husband was in the hospital for 8 months, you moved out of the home you had lived in for more than 20 years. You searched for housing and finally built a wheelchair accessible townhome. You brushed up on your patient advocacy skills, learned the names of all the staff on the nursing home floor, learned of the patient's names, provided flowers for dining room tables, and even brought in fortune cookies just to have some fun. And I knew exactly what you're saying because I've been there and done that these past 8 years with my mom. So I know how totally draining that can be. So before we begin, I just want to tip my hat to you, my friend.
Well, thank you.
How is your husband doing right now?
He's doing pretty well. He had 3 bouts of pneumonia, which set him back a bit.
Yeah.
And so he's back in physical therapy. But I'm amazed at what physical therapy can do. I mean, physical therapy is a place of miracles. Every person that you see there who is struggling, every one of those people has a story, indeed a novel.
Yes.
And it's amazing to see their progress.
You know, I'm so pleased that you said that. My mom just got out of 6 weeks in physical therapy, went in and couldn't do much and came out and now is so much more improved. And they invited me to speak to this rehab facility, to their entire staff. And that's exactly what I told them, that everyone that walks into their building has a story. And if they only knew that story, they could tend to those people so much better. And physical therapy is such a golden key to improving. Yeah, I'm glad that you said that because I think it's extremely, extremely important. Now, your husband was a former physician himself. So, I mean, he had experience with this world and so did you because of him being in healthcare. And now you mentioned that after 8 months, he's been kind of institutionalized. Let's just touch on that before we head into all of your books.
Well, that happens to many patients when they've been in the hospital a long time. And pretty soon they just kind of get absorbed in the daily routine. And to get along with people, an assertive patient may become less assertive. And pretty soon they're disinterested in the outside world. Their world is their hospital room. And the personalities change. It's a survival, actually. And some of them, when they get out of long-term hospitalization, become more assertive again, and some of them don't. So it's interesting to watch.
It is. It's difficult to watch as well.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So let's talk about your writing. When did you begin to write?
I began to write when I was a teacher, and I taught for a dozen years, and I started writing articles for educational journals, and I thought, oh, this is fun, and I can see my name in print. Whoopee! So I kept writing more, and then finally writing was in competition with teaching, and I figured I'd done all I could with the job I had, So I stopped teaching and turned to writing and have been doing that ever since.
And lucky that you were writing, because I'm sure that, as you mentioned in the intro, that writing was a catharsis for you, as it is, I think, for most people. But as you were writing then, did you also have an intent to show others the way?
Yes, and I've written a variety of things. I started out with books that were toys and games made from safe throwaways.
Oh.
So my first book, my first publisher, was Warner Books. And I wound up at the New Yorker's Book Country Fair in front of St. Patrick's Cathedral and demonstrating the toys that I had invented. And I wrote several more of those types of books and wound up inventing about 225 toys and games.
Oh.
And then because I had stopped teaching, because I tested the toys on the kids, when I stopped teaching, I just switch to writing about my life.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've written 8 grief recovery resources, and these are books that I never planned to write, but in 2007, when our daughter died, I was jolted into another topic. And 2007 we think of as the year of death, because our daughter died on a Friday. My husband's father died on Sunday, same weekend. 8 weeks later, my brother died.
Oh.
In the fall, my twin grandchildren's father died in another car crash. So we wound up as guardians and caregivers for 15-year-old twins, one boy and one girl.
Oh.
So basically, we relived the teenage years. Mm. We were at the gymnastics meet. We were at the choir concerts, marching band concerts, sleepovers were at our house. Kids walked in to, quote, hang. Didn't know what hang meant. My grandson said, can my friend come over and hang? I said, well, sure, because I wanted to be friendly.
Yeah.
And 10 minutes later, this tall boy walked in for dinner. So we hung for dinner, and he hung for television after dinner. He hung all night. He hung for breakfast. He hung for lunch. And you know teenage boys eat a lot of food.
Yes.
And I thought, oh, I'm going to have to go to the grocery store. And so I asked my grandson, how long is he staying? And my grandson said, oh, don't worry about it, Grandma. And a few minutes later, the boy left.
Oh.
And I still feel badly about that. Because since then, I found out that kids who come and stay overnight for as long as 3 days or longer are often homeless.
Boy. How would you have known that, though?
No, I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
We certainly welcomed him and fed him well.
Yes.
So.
Oh, my. Well, they always say to write what you know about, so you clearly, after 2007, became an expert on grief and grieving. What is your most recent grief book?
My most recent grief book is called Happy Again, Your New and Meaningful Life After Loss. I hadn't planned to write that book either, but I met a friend in the grocery store, and she was pushing her cart one way, I was pushing mine the other way, and she stopped and she said, well, Harriet, you look happy.
Mm-mm.
And I said, well, maybe it's because I had a haircut. She said, no, it's in your eyes. And you are happy. And I realized that I had created a new life, and I had created a happy one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you have to be open to that. You have to say, I've suffered this pain. I've been tested by life. But my loved ones would want me to have happy days, not sad days for as long as we live. And so I made that decision. And in fact, I give workshops on creating the happiness you seek.
Oh, I love that. Thank goodness that person came and saw that in your eyes and was able to be honest enough to say that to you, and then you took off and wrote about it.
I did.
Mm-hmm. Well, then, since then, you've moved on to books for family caregivers. Let's share with us the titles of those books and maybe briefly give the message in each.
The first one is called The Family Caregiver's Guide. And I started writing that 1 week after my husband was dismissed from 8 months in the hospital. And And I used to have a dedicated office in our former home. Now my office is a notch that I cut out of the laundry room. Mm. And I'm not complaining because four books came from the notch. And I could sit and write at my computer and see him in his bedroom. So I thought, well, I am going to write about what I know. And with all of these books, I have approached them with the idea that this is my real life, but this is what research says. So I connect the dots between real life and research. And at the end, I want people to have information that they can use. So I went on from the Family Caregiver's Guide to Affirmations for Family Caregivers, a journal for family caregivers, and the forthcoming The Family Caregiver's Cookbook. And all of the recipes are original, by the way, in the cookbook.
I want to talk about that in a minute. I think that's a really cool sidestep almost, but probably not. So what do you think is the main takeaway of your Family Caregiver's Guide? What do you really want people to take from that book?
The main takeaway is that you have some control over your life, even though it may seem out of control. And every chapter ends with smart steps that the reader can take. And I think there are about 101 of them.
Mm.
And if you are really stressed, and if you are almost paralyzed with worry, forget the book, read the smart steps.
Oh, okay.
Just go straight to them, and they are shaded at the end of every chapter, so they are easy to find. And these come from my life and from research. And even just taking one step can help you get out of the doldrums and give you just the boost you need.
Mm-hmm. Give us an example of a smart step or two.
Well, the first one is define your mission and write it down.
Mm-hmm.
So what is your mission as a caregiver? And I think that is important because you have to have a clear mission in order to take action. And I realized that my mission at this time in life was to help my husband recover from all of the health challenges and create a nice life for us. And even though he's in a wheelchair, you can have a satisfying life.
Mm-hmm.
So I sat down and wrote that mission, that was my mission. And it has helped me to know that. And my mission, I think, is as we age, our missions can change.
Yes.
When I was my twin grandchildren's guardian and caregiver, my mission was to protect them, nurture them, and love them more each day. And that mission continues, but it has taken kind of a back seat now.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, after all, 24 years old. And my mission now is to focus on my husband.
On your husband. Mm-hmm. I think that's very important to write it down and to be very clear about it, because so many of us are thrust into that caregiving role without even giving any thought to it because we don't have time. It's an emergent kind of a situation. And then as we live that, you start to get annoyed and angry. And I think it helps to stop and think, okay, why and what? And if you see it in writing, you could refer back to it when you're feeling those feelings of despair.
Yes, you can refocus.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to me that well-meaning relatives and friends often offer advice
mm-hmm.
that turns out to be not so helpful.
Yeah.
And while I was caring for my twin grandchildren who had moved in with us, several friends said, oh, Harriet, you are going to have to give up writing in order to care for teenagers. And I thought, well, that's terrible
mm-hmm.
advice.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. I'll have to lose my identity. And I did not follow their advice. And, in fact, I sat down and wrote a book about that. It's
yeah.
called Help, I'm Raising My Grandkids.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that my friends wanted to help me and be supportive, but that advice was neither.
Sometimes it helps just to be quiet, huh?
True.
Now, this kind of takes me to your next book, The Affirmations for a Family Caregiver. Personally, I'm a big proponent of affirmations because your brain really doesn't know the difference between what is real and what you feed it. So why not feed it positive thoughts?
Yes.
Tell us a bit about that book, The Affirmations for Family Caregivers.
I suggested the idea to my publisher, and she emailed back to me and said, I love this idea, and I can see people focusing on an affirmation to get them through a caregiving day. And I researched affirmation writing a bit, and I came across interesting information. For example, one expert said, well, fake it till you make it. And others said, well, write about the life you hope to have. And I thought, well, neither of those was helpful to me. I chose to affirm the life that I am living now. And it changed my thinking totally. I'm not saying the days were bad or so challenging I didn't think that I would get through a day, but it changed my thinking from negative thoughts to positive. And one affirmation that strikes me even today, I wrote, rehabilitation progress is measured in fractions of an inch, and each fraction, no matter how tiny, is significant.
Mm.
And my husband's recovery was measured in fractions of an inch. And I think that brings up a thought I mentioned to one of the rehab specialists, you know, how do you do this on a regular basis? And she said she did get discouraged sometimes, but she knew she was helping people. And I told her a story. I said, well, my husband was fitted for a wheelchair. He rented one for a while, and then we finally were approved for an electric wheelchair. And I said, the people who fitted him for the wheelchair might not have known that it would change his life. And he escorted our granddaughter down the aisle at her wedding.
Oh.
And there was hardly a dry eye in the church.
My.
That story went back to the people who fit patients for wheelchairs.
Mm-hmm.
And when she retold the story, she said their eyes filled up with tears.
Again, how important to bring this back to the caregivers, because I think they see their work almost in a silo. They know what they do. I'm fitting for a wheelchair, and there's no afterwards, or there are no real people involved. They're just doing what they know to do. But to bring that story back, where they can then realize that every conversation, every move, everything they do really does affect that person in their future, that's golden.
Yes, and what they do really makes a difference.
It does. It does, and I like that idea. Rehab progresses at a fraction of an inch. You know, we're a society that wants to see things now and immediate gratification, and we want these giant quantum leaps. But something like rehabilitation is very tiny and subtle, and we need to realize that and be patient for it.
We do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love our conversation. Let's talk about your journal for family caregivers, because we talked about writing down your mission. Let's talk about the journal for family caregivers. How does that stand out from other journaling books?
I researched journaling books on Amazon, and I thought, boy, I'm in the little fish swimming upstream here. And then I thought, well, no, maybe I have something to offer. And I was reminded of my affirmations book. So at the top of every page, there is an affirmation for the person using the journal. And one affirmation reads, no is often a self-care word, one I use to defend myself and my time. And then the writing prompt is different. Some journals say things like, imagine yourself on a desert island. They build up a plot. I don't have time for that.
Exactly.
So I used the finish the sentence approach.
Ooh.
And all the finish the sentence prompts come from my life. So the writing prompt then for that affirmation is, I have to say no when, and then you list when you've said no. And the most important part is the bottom of the page, and it says action. Do you need to take any action? For example, you may need to get better at saying no.
Mm-hmm.
You may need to drop the guilt about saying no. If no action is needed, you write no action. And by the time you get to the end of the journal, you pick the top best action steps and create an action plan. So you've not only documented your present life, you have documented something for your future life.
Wow, this is huge. I strongly suggest that anybody who is in a caregiving mode or who may be, to get these books, The Family Caregiver's Guide, The Affirmations for Family Caregivers, and The Journal for Family Caregivers. This is so important. And I think I found this on your blog. I think you recently wrote about this, about mentally reversing roles with a loved one. And you know, we talk about empathy all the time, but being a caregiver and, you know, years and years into it is so exhausting that you kind of lose that ability sometimes to be empathetic. But when you think about mentally reversing roles with a loved one, let's talk about that, because I think that's a way to kind of refresh your viewpoint of what it must feel like to be that person.
Well, I've thought a lot about how would I feel if my husband John were my caregiver and I was the person in the wheelchair. And I do not think I would have as cheerful a personality as he has, or be as cooperative as he is. I think I would probably become kind of grouchy.
Yeah.
And I think about that a lot. And also, I have taken over some tasks that he had used to do, but that's just part of being a caregiver.
Yeah.
I mean, that happens. And I ran into a woman who was her husband's caregiver and was shocked to learn that she had never written a check. She had never paid bills. And I thought, wow, she must be, you know, in shock now doing all of this. And I am blessed to have a husband who believes in me. And when I said, well, I'm putting the house on the market and I had 20 plus years of stuff to clear out, choose furniture for the next location. I started looking for housing in Rochester, and that's Rochester, Minnesota. Could not find housing that would work for us. I found an apartment that was 500 square feet. Well, you can hardly turn a wheelchair around in 500 square feet. And the more I looked, the more I realized that I had to build a wheelchair-accessible townhome. So I did all that, managed the finances, managed the relationship with the realtor, but all with my husband's blessing. And I think that goes back to your relationship with the person you are caring for.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have a good relationship, it may make caregiving more difficult. Fortunately, we've always had a close relationship and confidence in each other.
And that changes dramatically if we're talking about a child, an adult child, caring for a parent, because then you are switching roles 360 in an experience that you've never felt before.
Exactly. And I keep hearing people say, well, I'm the mother now, or I'm the father, whatever. That's not necessarily true.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a parent will always be the parent, no matter what the condition of the child and what their health challenges are. The parent is always the parent. But your comment also strikes a chord, because I just read recently that a lot of children in our country, we're talking pretty young kids, as young as 10 and preteens, are caring for impaired parents.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the kids who may not be eating right. These are the kids who are flunking at school, and they don't want to talk about it. But I'm sorry to say, Pat, I don't have the statistic, but it is thousands of kids who are caring for their parents.
Wow. That is astounding. And as they cover that up, the school doesn't realize it, the teachers don't realize it, friends, neighbors, nobody realizes it. And now this child becomes kind of cast to the side and maybe a troubled youth and get in trouble. And we start a whole new set of circumstances and difficulties for this little person.
Yes, complicating.
Yes. Yes. I don't know what we could do to correct that.
Well, that's another program, isn't it?
It is. That's another conversation for another time. Let's head into your cookbook, because you've got one coming out in October. So why a cookbook?
I used to be a food writer for the Rochester, Minnesota magazine when it was first started to be published 20 years ago. And then the magazine was taken over by the newspaper, and newspaper staff have been mostly writing the article. So I'm a foodie, first of all. I'm a very competent cook. I hate to admit this, but it's true. I rarely make a recipe as written.
Mm-hmm.
The exception with that is baking, because baking is chemistry.
Exactly.
So I measure very carefully. But I'm always tweaking the recipe to suit my own taste. Or if I love mushrooms, I'll put more in. Yesterday I made mushroom soup from scratch. You know, I threw some mushrooms and a little butter and added chicken stock and a few tiny, tiny carrots for color and a little bit of parsley, and it was a nice lunch on a rainy day. But when my husband was in the hospital, so he was in intensive care for about 3 months and finally transferred to a nursing home for physical therapy because he had such a large wound, they needed to use something called a wound vac. So I visited him 3 times a day, and here I was cleaning out the house and building the townhome, and I hardly had time to eat. So dinner was a bowl of cereal or a dish of ice cream, and that went on for weeks, and I had a few fast food meals and thought, you know, I miss home cooking. And then if I was honest, I said, I miss my own cooking. So my poor behavior led to the cookbook, and I thought there must be other family caregivers who want to have a good, nutritious meal, but they have to be easy to fix, and that's the whole concept. It's easy fix recipes for busy family caregivers.
Oh, I love this, and you mentioned something very important is nutrition, not just for the caregiver, but obviously for the patient. And that's a real big sticking point for me when folks are in hospitals, patients are in hospitals and in rehab facilities, that the nutrition is seriously lacking. You mentioned that your husband had a wound. My mom had a stage 4 pressure sore. So obviously nutrition was high on the list, and you're not getting the proper nutrition in these facilities and not getting the amount of protein that one needs. And something seriously needs to be done in these hospitals and rehab places to amp up and ramp up the nutrition side. So maybe you could offer your cookbook and your recipes to them as well, because malnutrition is a serious problem in hospitals.
I'm sure. And I know a lot of hospitals have dietitians. And I do mention in the cookbook that if your loved one is on certain medication, food tastes differently.
Yes.
It does right to you. And if your loved one is going through chemotherapy, they may not want to eat at all. So one recipe is called sweet soothing custard. And it gives your loved one some milk and may, you know, prompt them to eat when they haven't eaten before. I want to qualify, this is not a gourmet cookbook. I appreciate gourmet cookbooks, but this is not one of them. And all of the recipes are original. If I started with a recipe, as I've told you, by the time I get finished with a recipe, there's little resemblance to the original. I mean, I've added ingredients, deleted ingredients, changed the method. And the quick fix meals and easy fix meals, there's one in foil, fish in foil. I mean, Scouts have been doing that for years. Making a can of clam chowder taste more homemade by adding bacon and a little corn. And my husband went to college in New Hampshire where they say chowda.
Ah.
So the recipe is called New England clam chowda.
Chowda.
I can't imitate that accent.
No, you can't. That's a rough one. That is a rough one. Oh, you're funny. Oh, wow. See, this is exciting. You are doing such positive work with your books and now this cookbook. I think it's just so, so important. So what's next for Harriet Hodgson?
Well, I write for 3 websites. I continue to write articles, and knowing that I'm writing for 3 websites keeps me going. In a way, I'm afraid if I have another book idea,
mm-hmm.
because I have to launch this series, and I'm not very good at marketing. I come from a generation where you were taught not to brag.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you don't do that. You don't tell people that you've written books or are proud of them. And as my publisher says, you are not bragging, you are stating facts, that you have written all of these books and you've written a caregiving series, and those are the facts. So I hope that people will be interested in these books because they're easy to read. There's not too many pages, which can be intimidating. Always have a resource list. Always have helpful tips for the reader. And my heart and soul are in these books.
Mm-hmm. I can tell. Well, now, Harriet, is there anything that you'd like to talk about that we missed today?
The only thing I'd like to talk about is if you read one of my books and enjoyed it, I hope you'll take a few minutes to write 3 sentences about it, on post them on Amazon under the customer review section, because really that's the boost that every author needs. And in the computer age, it's a necessary boost. And just tell your friends about it, mm-hmm. and if you don't see them in your local bookstore, please ask for these books, because they are also e-books, I should say, too. But they should be in bookstores and through e-book sellers.
Excellent. We've heard this from other authors that said, please, just take that moment and write a review, because that's what keeps you guys going. So where can folks go then to find out more about you and to purchase your books?
You can go to HarrietHodgson.com, and Harriet has 2 R's, and Hodgson is Hodgson. You can go to Amazon.com or to my publisher, which is Write Life, WriteLife.com.
Excellent. I knew that we were going to have so much to talk about today, and there really is so much more we can head into. But if folks want more, please get a copy of these books. I mean, this is huge information, and it's all there for you. HarrietHodgson.com. Harriet, bless you for what you're doing, and bless your husband. I hope that he continues to do well, and your 2 grandchildren. Thank you for taking the time to share you and your books with our listeners today.
Thank you for inviting me, Pat.